This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Why, hello, you there of a curious, adventurous tendency. You've come to the right place. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Welcome along. You've managed to stumble upon the only show that you can download and save to your phone that will take you to the furthest ends of the universe. It'll guide you through all the deadly, weird, and amazing stuff that's lingering there. And then it'll bring you home within the hour. So it's all good. My name's Dan. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Today we're talking about a fish that scuttles along the floor of the ocean. But it doesn't really belong there. It belongs in like a superhero movie. Honestly, this thing is a shapeshifter. Yeah. We'll talk a bit more about that later on. Also, we'll learn about a massive map of the stars, and we'll chat to a man who has made a timeline of bugs. That's on the way in a sec. First, we're looking at power with N and G. They're our alien friends. They've crash-landed on this planet. They're trying to get back home, but to do that, to make their spaceship work, they need to have a look at your home.
N and G's Energy Challenge.
Well, I can see that. You're certainly making the most of it.
Look, I've got the telly box on, and the computer, and popcorn's ready.
Made a snack, too. Look, come on. We're not going to find our way back to Zog sitting here. Let's find out more about electricity, like how it gets into these houses. I think we might need to go underground for this.
Aw, can't I just finish watching the telly? Just 5 more minutes.
All of the gadgets that you've been using get their energy through plugs that you've connected to sockets in the wall. Electricity is fed through these sockets, through cables under the floorboards or within the walls. And in turn, these cables connect up to even bigger cables under the streets. And there's nearly 14,000 kilometres of them. Ouch! We've hit a substation. Inside these buildings is equipment that changes the voltage of the electricity so that it's suitable to be used within homes.
Is this where electricity's made?
Nope, our journey isn't over yet.
Ooh, big metal trees!
Pylons, they're called pylons. The UK has over 7,000 kilometres of overhead wires carried between pylons. These power lines crisscross the country, carrying electricity to where it's needed. And it isn't just homes. Electricity powers trains and factories, schools and streetlights, and it all comes from here, back to where it started.
Where's that? The power station? Is this where electricity is made?
Yep, there's over 50 power stations across the UK. They're often found in the countryside or near the coast, normally far away from where people live. Electricity that's made here is a bit like a stream of tiny charged particles that are fed into those cables. Just think of it as a massive river running around the country.
Oh, right. And the cables carry the electricity all the way to people's homes.
You've got it. If somebody wants to use some electricity, they just take it out of the flow, out of the plug sockets.
N, Mrs. Bubcombe and Harrow just switched her kettle on.
Why is that a problem?
Well, it's a flow going around the country and she's got it going into her kettle. Everyone else will have to wait for their electricity. Hurry up with your copper, Mrs. Bubcombe.
That's not how it works. Electricity travels in an enormous loop. Some electricity will go into the kettle, but the rest just keeps going around the country until it's either used or returns to the power station. And then it all starts again.
As endless as the flowing lava over the most southerly Zogian snowcaps.
Kinda. It's got something in common with the lava flows on Zog, actually.
You mean the electricity comes bursting out of the top of the crag of Mount Oob?
Well, clearly not.
I suppose that would be a bit hard with Mount Oob being on Zog, 3 trillion light-years away. Is it that the flow of electricity races down the ice pig plains on the 7th moon day of the equinox?
You're obsessed with those ice pigs. No, what I meant was the circuit of electricity can be very dangerous. It can even kill humans. You'll have noticed the big signs warning of the danger near overhead lines and around substations.
Well, however great this electricity is, there's no danger of it getting us home. Our laser pod needs something even more powerful.
You may be right. We'll have to keep searching.
Watch out! Looks like we're gonna fuse, G! Here it comes. Whoopee! television.
Here it comes. Woohoo!
NNG's Energy Challenge. With support from National Grid. Find out more online at funkyfly.com/energy.
You can learn loads more about NNG's adventures to try and get themselves back to their home planet online. You can get all their episodes wherever you get your podcasts from, you know, places like iTunes, standard things like that. Also, they're on the free Fun Kids app and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. So how do you feel about bugs? Are you a bit like me with the little insects? And you're kind of fine because they're tiny and they're also weird, which is strangely fascinating, and you just want to know more. Are you like that, or are you a bit like almost everyone else I know? And when a tiny little earwig crawls through your room, you jump into the air like you found yourself on a trampoline all of a sudden. Well, if that's you, have a listen to this. In a sec, we'll find out that some bugs used to be as big as eagles. Don't worry, don't freak out, they're not anymore. We'll find out why, though, with Christopher Lloyd from the Natural History Museum in a little bit. Also, remember, I am always after your science questions. So if there's something sciencey about the mysteries of the universe that's niggling in your brain and you just can't figure out why, well, I can help you out with that. Let me know the question and I will get an expert on the phone to sort it for you. All you need to do is to ask me first. Now, to do that, get over to the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there and leave us a review. It's so simple. Write your name, drop us 5 stars, and in the comment, ask me your question. That's why it's nice and easy for me to see. Seriously, have a go right now. I promise, it is so easy. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on the iTunes podcast store. Think of a question, leave us a review. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our guest today can tell us about some of the most annoying, frustrating, but also interesting creatures in the whole world and throughout history. Christopher Lloyd is the creator of Explorer Bugs. It's been made in association with the Natural History Museum. It charts the history of bugs from 500 million years ago right through to today. First question, what's the earliest bug that we know about, and what evidence do we have of its existence?
When you go back 500 million years ago, all life is in the sea. And if you were to dive down into the sea about that time, you would find some really extraordinary creatures, things unlike anything that is alive today. And some of the most interesting of these are the ancestors of bugs. And I think probably the most significant is the trilobite. Now, these are fossils that are quite common throughout the world, but trilobites first appear about 530 million years ago. And they look like beetles, and they could sometimes typically grow about the size of your thumb, but sometimes it could grow as big as a metre. And the amazing thing about trilobites is thought that they're the first creatures to have been able to see. Now, this changes everything at the bottom of the sea. Because if you imagine all creatures being blind, they have to fumble around in the dark to find food. Imagine that you suddenly have developed this amazing technology called eyesight, which means that you can actually target things. So other creatures have to find new strategies to survive, like camouflage. You see, there'll be no such thing as camouflage without eyesight. And that's why worms now bury themselves in the ground so they could avoid being eaten by the trilobites with their eyesight. And other creatures develop shells like mollusks and mussels and oysters and clams so that their soft bodies will be protected from creatures with eyes, i.e. trilobites, the ancestral arthropod or bug, that could target them with this amazing technology under the sea. So to my mind, you know, you go back that far and suddenly you begin to see it. This is the tip of the iceberg of the most amazing story.
So they're very useful as well, just from 500 million years ago when they first developed sight right through to today. They help pollinate fruits, yes, and plants. How else do they keep our environment in tip-top working condition?
Of course, they're not just useful to humans. I mean, if you think about it, what would the world be like without honey and without honeybees? Bees have influenced ancient civilizations all the way from the Egyptians. And many of the things you see in human civilizations were actually pioneered 100 million years ago in the world of insects. They teach each other how to do things. They guard their nests. Some of them are soldiers, some of them are workers, some of them reproduce. They divide labor up into different things, just like we do in our cities today. And so actually, many of the cultures that you think are unique to humans are not unique to humans at all. They first started in the world of insects.
And it's not just their intelligence and their usefulness. I'd imagine something brilliant about bugs is their staying power. If you think when many creatures have come and gone, we've had whole ranges of huge reptiles that ruled the world, and then they were extinct with a massive meteor, some volcanoes, loads of ash, killed them off. Why are the bugs staying here? What increases their staying power?
That's a brilliant question. When life gets tough, it's good to be small. That's basically the tip. If you're a giant great Diplodocus and something happens in the environment, you're a lot more vulnerable than if you're an ant. Because ants can hide, ants can burrow away. They don't need much food for survival. If the world goes dark, they'll find some litter around or they'll find something that they can eat. And there have been 5 mass extinctions in the history of the world. The worst was 252 million years ago. The most recent was the one that killed off the dinosaurs 65.5 million years ago. Every time it's been good to be small. Because and bugs are, they are small, except when you get to about 300 million years ago, you will find that actually bugs got very big. And there was an ancestral dragonfly called a griffinfly that could grow up to the size of an eagle. Can you imagine an eagle-sized dragonfly? They were very vicious, by the way. And there was a spider that could grow up to a meter wide. So actually, bugs haven't always been small. They've been big in ancient history or prehistory. And the reason is thought to be because oxygen levels were higher then. Because, you see, bugs don't have lungs and hearts to pump oxygen around their body. That's what allows mammals and reptiles and amphibians to get really big. They rely on the oxygen in the air to filter through little tubes. So if there's more oxygen in the air, like there was in those days, then they could grow much bigger. And as oxygen levels get lower, as they are today, then, of course, the insects have to grow smaller. But by being smaller, they're at an advantage because if catastrophe strikes, they've got a better chance of survival.
What else has stuck with them then? And how else have they changed? So if you say that they used to be much bigger than we imagine that they are now, what are the other constants that we see with bugs today?
If you imagine a typical fairy story, like a frog turns into a prince. Now, the world of insects is much more amazing. A caterpillar turns into a butterfly. Now, I mean, that is truly stunning. How does a little worm-like creature that just lives on a leaf like that and then surrounds itself in this cocoon like a changing room, and then over 3 weeks, it transforms itself into a creature that can fly with the most beautiful wings, and out it hatches and off it goes. And this is what developed in the world of bugs. And this idea of metamorphosis, of changing completely from one body form to another, was pioneered in the world of bugs millions and millions of years ago. And it's been so effective that bugs have kept this metamorphosis all the way through millions and millions of years to their huge advantage and their great credit.
I just want to touch on metamorphosis, specifically the butterfly. Evolutionary-wise, what's the point in that?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, the most important one is that, of course, it's to reproduce. Because, of course, that caterpillar needs to find another creature of the opposite sex in order to be able to fertilize and have more offspring. And if it can do that by flying, it's got a much greater chance of being able to spread itself and the species and find a partner than if it's just crawling around on a leaf.
Tell us about the book then. It's Explorer Bugs. It's got this fantastic timeline in the back. That's not all though. You're the creator of these series of books. There are many more that we can pick up as well. Just give us a brief glimpse of what we can get inside.
Basically, when you open the first page, you will see that there is a character here called Agent Eagle, who it looks slightly like me, he's basically a librarian by day, but he's fascinated in discovering about real things that have happened in the past, and he's been sent on a mission by the Eagle-Eyed Explorer Club to find out everything about bugs. And you can follow his journal as he steps you through what a bug is and where they came from, all the way through to the most amazing bugs when they were the size of dragonflies and spiders a meter wide, all the way through to the evolution of bugs when plants came on the scene and you have beetles and you have all sorts of insect civilizations, etc. And he charts it up in his notebook with lots of illustrations, lots of fascinating drawings, and ways in which you can become a world expert on bugs. And then by the time we get to see other bug explorers, which are all featured in his diary with a few quizzes and things at the end to check that you're now the world expert, you'll find there's a glossary in case you don't understand some of the terms, and an index if you want to look things up. And then at the end, you've got your fold-out timeline, and then you can spread it out on the floor. Several people can look at it at once or put it up on the wall, and hopefully you will see that this extraordinary story over 500 million years is something, you know, that we're surrounded by.
It's honestly one of the most, of all the books that have come through the Fun Kids studio, it's one of the ones that has caught my eye and filled my mind the most, I'd imagine. It's been created by Christopher Lloyd. It's called Explorer Bugs with the Natural History Museum. Christopher, thank you so much for coming.
Great pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's time for today's Dangerous Dan, where we have a look at the most mean and deadly things in the universe. And this week, we're headed under the sea to have a look at a beast that looks like it was at a paint factory on explosion day. Now, have you ever seen a Pfeffer's flamboyant cuttlefish? I mean, unless your Google image searches are pretty extensive, or you've actually been to the bottom of the ocean, you probably haven't. Well, have a listen to this. The cuttlefish, it skims along the ocean floor, looking like he's had a bad time at an art class. You know, he's covered in different colours. Sensational. A bit like he's off to a carnival. But he may not stay like that for long, though, because this cuttlefish, it's a sensational shapeshifter. It can change the colour, the pattern, and the texture of its skin in seconds. Oh, this is important, right? The Pfeffer's flamboyant cuttlefish is a perfect example, right, of one of the most important things about nature. If something looks really colourful, really attractive and appetising, it usually means it wants you to think that, and it wants to be eaten, because it wants to poison you. And this is the only type of cuttlefish that is poisonous as well. One bite of this squirmy, shifting beast, it can cause nausea, breathing problems, heart failure, your brain can seize up, and then you can die within minutes. So let the flamboyant cuttlefish be a lesson to you. In nature, if something's too pretty, it probably means it's pretty deadly too. Is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now we'll talk about a gigantic map of the stars that an actual satellite is drawing for you in just a sec. First, it's time for another human versus beast battle, where we pit two titans of their species against each other. Today, it's all about speed.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
Join us just as the race is about to begin. We're pitting man against animal in our Extreme Athlete Challenge. So, who's the fastest runner on Earth? In lane one, Usain Bolt, the fastest human on record, who smashed records in 2009 when he ran 100 metres in just 9.58 seconds. And in lane two, the cheetah, the fastest land-based animal on the planet.
This animal is built for speed with its powerful muscular legs.
They're taking their places, and they're off. What an amazing start.
Usain Bolt is known as Lightning Bolt, and you can see why. He's off the blocks and running at an average of 23 miles an hour.
Phenomenally fast.
But Cheetah's taken the lead with his amazing ability to accelerate. This cat can go from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 3 seconds.
That's faster than most cars.
Maybe Usain will be wishing he bought his car today. It's getting close. Cheetah may be fast and built for speed, but he can overheat over long distances. Will he burn out before the finish line?
There's no contest. Coming up to the line, and it's Cheetah. He's left Usain standing, and Cheetah has won the race. He's our fastest extreme athlete.
Well done to Cheetah.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
Let's have a look then at all the science that's been in the news this week. The US and European space agencies are planning a joint mission to bring rocks back from Mars. They've signed a letter to try and conduct the first ever round trip to the planet. They're hoping the rocks will tell us things about the red planet that we've always wondered, like maybe whether Mars once hosted life or not. Speaking of space, also, the European Space Agency, they've plotted the position and the brightness of nearly 1.7 billion stars. The Gala Observatory is assembling the most precise map of the sky we've ever known. It's a hugely ambitious project to try and produce a 3D book of the heavens. Our Milky Way galaxy will be in there, and there'll be thousands of other ones too. And finally, Tornado Alley has been surprisingly quiet this year. Places in Oklahoma and Kansas in the USA, they've had the quietest start to a tornado season on record. Now, usually what happens at this time of the year is warm air whips around the sky, making these swirls of storms, this windy tornado. Scientists think, though, that it's not happening very much this year because the jet stream has been pushed further south. And that means that while normally the southern states of America have had 19 tornadoes in April alone, year on year, this year, 2018, they've had none. Now, before we finish this week's episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly, the show where I promise to take you to the furthest ends of the universe and back again within the hour, it might take a little bit longer this week, because I fancy squeezing in some time travelling. and we're headed back. Might take a while because we're going, well, 200 million years into the past, and we're having a look down at the ground.
Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur
at the Natural History Museum.
Imagine going back in time, not 100 years or 1,000 years, but millions of years. To the age of the dinosaur. Welcome to the Cretaceous period, which existed between 65 and 144 million years ago. More dinosaurs lived during this time than at any other. The world was experiencing some of the hottest climates ever known, and was home to a wider range of environments and species than had ever been seen before.
Wow, check out the cool flowers.
Flowering plants known as angiosperms began to bloom in the Cretaceous period, spreading from the warmer tropics where the conditions were perfect for them to flourish. One common type of angiosperm were the palms, which populated the forests in huge numbers, although another type you might recognize were water lilies, like those found in ponds today. And with flowers came many varieties of insects, from butterflies and beetles to flies and ants, and also early relatives of bees to pollinate the flowers.
Ouch! This plant is very spiky.
That's a cyclad, and it's telling you to keep off. With more animals around, plants had to get clever too. Some grew spikes. Others developed poisons or unpleasant tastes to put herbivores off eating them.
Watch out! Something massive's on the move!
He's massive, all right. It's an Argentinosaurus. The herbivores in the Cretaceous period were some of the largest sauropods ever. Sauropods had huge bodies, long tails and necks, and small heads. And the Argentinosaurus is thought to be the largest that ever lived. Only a few fossils have been found, but they show he was 30 meters long and weighed over 60 tons. With his enormous neck, he could reach the tallest treetops to strip huge amounts of vegetation he needed. Herbivores like the Argentinosaurus roamed around forests like these amongst the conifers and palms.
Oh, it's really hot here.
Even hotter parts of the world, like the area that's now East Asia, were more like deserts. Very hardy plants grew there, and dinosaurs had to be tough to survive. Either managing to eat the dry and spiky vegetation, or by preying on other animals. As a result, deserts were some of the most terrifying places of all.
Look out! It's a ferocious Tarbosaurus!
Paleontology. Pick.
Insects can help us learn about plant life, but insects rarely become fossilized. However, soft and sticky resin that oozes from tree bark can trap insects, preserving them incredibly well when fossilized into amber. Amber found in Ethiopia in 2010 helped scientists put together a snapshot of the Cretaceous woodland and the different animals and plants that lived there at that time. Spiders, wasps, and one of the oldest ants in the world were all trapped in perfect detail. Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur.
The new interactive exhibition at the Natural History Museum. Walk alongside life-size moving animatronic dinosaurs and other strange creatures among the smells and sounds of the prehistoric Jurassic swamps and Cretaceous deserts. Find out more at nhm.ac.uk.
But watch out for what's around the corner.
There are loads more episodes from our Age of the Dinosaur series that you can catch up on for free on that Fun Kids app, wherever you get your podcasts from, and they're always at funkidslive.com. And that is it then for another episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Now remember, this is the important part. If you have got a science question right now in your mind, it's niggling away at your brain, you just can't figure it out. I don't know, maybe it was something you were told at school in a lesson by a teacher and you just can't believe it. Or maybe it was something that your mate told you in the playground because they heard it off their dad's big brother's stepsister and you just don't believe it. Well, it's fine. Ask it to me and I will ask an official expert in that field on your behalf, and we'll sort it out once and for all. To send me the question, the best way is to get onto the iTunes podcast store and leave it as a review of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Find us on there, drop us 5 stars, you can ask me that way. Also, by the way, while you're on the iTunes podcast store, you can find all the brilliant Fun Kids Science series on there, also on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And as always, you can listen to Fun Kids all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.